Everybody, welcome to Insight Nature versus Nurture. This is a podcast dedicated to the who, what, when, where, and why of nutrition, how a healthy organism like ourselves has been led astray, and we get down to the very bottom of it. So tonight's podcast, guys, if you're up for it, is something that I've been working on for a long time. It is nutrition timing. So like a conversation, and it's funny because we had a bit of a conversation here before this actually came up and going, timing is everything, okay? Something said at the wrong time, like food introduced at the wrong time, no matter how well-meaning it is, can be inflammatory if the other person isn't in the mood to hear it, okay? And food is no different. Just because a food has a lot of nutritional value does not mean it's healthy for the organism consuming it. And this is something that I think we've overlooked in a long period. We are omnivorous, meaning we eat both herbs, right? We're herbivores, right? We eat plants, and we're also carnivores. We have the digestive systems to support that. But no one's really asking as to how the food should be introduced. You know, when you look at mammals around the world, okay, mammals in as a species, you don't see them eat two things at the same time. Like you never see a carnivore eat a gazelle and then go and have some veggies with it or some grain, right? In the same, right? Sure. Chimpanzees, our closest living relative, you don't see them eat from a very convoluted plate. You know what I mean? A stacked plate. So anyway, what I'm getting to is that we are the only mammals on God's green earth that put everything on one plate and let the digestive system sort it out. We're not thinking in regards to how the body functions from day to night, what our bodies are put through the day, how we change biochemically throughout the day. Our chemistry is different in the morning than it is in the evening. And there's lots of studies that support that in terms of insulin, in terms of testosterone, right? Our moods, fatigue level, stress level, all these things, they can influence how the body perceives the food coming in. So what I've been looking at over the last probably close to 10 years now is, does that make a difference? Because it all started off, and Joel, you can, you know, chime in on this because you probably know a lot about this, and Ben as well. Greg, you probably have heard about it in terms of training, but it's that anabolic window. We'll start with there, and then let's start using that as a purchase point for this for the podcast.
Sure. It's so for a bodybuilder, they say eat within, you know, an hour of your workout for better absorption.
Yeah.
Is there, some people say it's true, but some people say there's not a whole lot of truth in that.
It depends on who you're talking to. Now, when you look in terms of evolution, the reason why the body is so tuned into nutrition after you've just expended a shit ton of calories, burnt a bunch of glucose, things like that. Think of the hunter-gatherer, right? If you don't eat within a certain time frame after you've expended that type of energy, after that adrenaline rush, right? Then really what's happening is, because the body sees in different contexts than our eyes and our mind does, the body feels like, okay, you shit the bed. You didn't successfully hunt. Right? So the gazelle got away, or the deer, or whatever it was that you're hunting. So the body then goes into kind of a self-preservation mode. It slows its metabolism down because it now needs to live and hunt another day. Whereas if we're eating soon after the expenditure, then that's usually an indicator that the hunt was successful, and it's more like a reward. And that's where these hungry cells, that term the hungry cell, comes from. And that's why we need less insulin in order to absorb nutrition after we've just expended a whole bunch, after we've had those hormones released, cortisol, adrenaline, all these things. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And actually, I find it's kind of cool, because a lot of things that are healthy for us, a lot of practices or a way to eat or things that we do that they say is good, for example, the cold shower, they're all things you can relate to our ancestors. Exactly. They're all things that they did. Like back in the day, they didn't have hot showers. And now now people are just going back to cold showers. They say it's good for your skin, it's good for your heart, it's good for
your brain,
a bunch of things, right?
Yeah.
And same goes with intermittent fasting. Our ancestors didn't have a fridge full of food right off the bat in the morning. They had to go hunt and gather food and then eat later in the day. So they were intermittent, they were doing the intermittent fasting, right? Exactly. So a lot of these things that we do nowadays that is for fitness or to be healthier, we actually did all of these things back in the days, right?
So it's go ahead, Greg, sorry.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Joel, because I was going to say, so what happens to the intermittent faster people that want to work out in the morning but want to keep their fast till lunch or whatever, and they're not going to get food an hour after their workout? Do you mean, so does it kind of flip intermittent fasting on its head then, more or less? Or
it does for that instance, because of the fact that it's just, you know, biochemically they'll just have to change their fast to a different point of the day. They may have to cut their eating early in the evening earlier, and then fast that way.
Does it matter the type of exercise they do though? So for example, like cardio, would cardio be different than weight training?
Yeah.
On fasting. Do you know what I mean? Like it's an anaerobic workout as opposed to a muscle workout. I don't know what you call that, but.
No, you're bang on. And that's a good point. And this is kind of where we're taking it to the next level. And this information is going to be probably like 2 years ago, it was about 5 years. So about 3 years from now, you're going to start seeing a lot of this information come to the forefront in regards to, so when you're done exercise of any sort, whether it's cardiovascular, whether it's muscle, you're still breaking ATP. You're still burning a lot of glucose, and our bodies primarily, the muscle runs off glycogen. So the primary fuel source after that would be kind of a fruit based type meal afterwards to replenish your glucose stores, to be able to drag the carcass back to the village or whatever. And then in the evening they'd feast on the kill, right? And then they, you know, have this highly anabolic time where they'd eat this and their body would repair itself. Hormones would regulate, right? The body would go into this anabolic, a positive nitrogen where the muscle could regenerate. They grow bigger, stronger muscle because the body saw the hunt as, you know, I almost bit the dust on this one. You know, I was almost not strong enough to take that deer down or climb that hill or climb that tree in order to get that, right? So it gives the body time. And Joel talks about this in his training, about taking time off to recover and how the body does, how that's where muscles develop. It's stimulated during the workout and then it's developed during the time off. So it's a very highly anabolic time. But the thing is that glucose it's the second best source of glucose for the body is actually protein. So after you've expended that kind of fuel, it's really, really important to get that back into you immediately. You could do it through protein. Like everybody drinks that protein shake after their workout as an anabolic, right? But the thing is what it does is it prevents what's called catabolism or catabolic, right? It prevents your liver from breaking down muscle, the amino acids, into glucose. So really that shake that you're downing after a workout, it's a sacrificial lamb. It's actually just surging protein into your system so the body doesn't delve and you know, jump into its own muscle tissue, break that down in order to appease its liver glucose. Because remember, guys, the liver is your brain function. It's your heart. It's your lungs, right? It runs all of the autonomic systems. So those are the number one priority, right? You can't lose consciousness. You still need to be able to think on your feet, right? You still have to be aware. So that's where the protein comes in. But in our day and age, we've got access to fruit. And fruit is an incredible post-workout. It gets vitamins and minerals, gets the glucose into the liver, so the liver's not even thinking about breaking down the muscle. And then you can carry on, and then you can start, you know, you can gorge on that meat at night and then become highly anabolic at nighttime.
So would you be better off getting the fruit then rather than the protein drink? Doesn't that make protein drinks kind of gimmicky? Because if you want the most secure source of glucose that you can get, and if you're trying to break down proteins into its amino acids, then you're using more energy to get that glucose.
That's a really good point. And that's a big point of why, like, we're getting into this feeding structure and how we're going to circle around to this. But essentially by drinking the protein shake after you've trained and you've had that rush of adrenaline, muscle breakdown, ATP bonds are broken, what you're effectively doing, and this is why when someone with hypermuscularity or someone who has a very high protein diet and with carbohydrates, they lose so much muscle,
yeah,
right? They lose an incredible amount of muscle when they A, stop training, or B, become injured or sick. The body just feasts on protein. It knows how to convert. The liver has now been conditioned and has been taught how to use protein as a source of carbohydrates at a very efficient level. By using fruit post-training, and you're seeing a lot more, like a lot more doctors in terms of exercise physiologists and you know, people that have expertise in the metabolism, sports in specific, you're seeing now, like there was a video I put up to the page a while back, and there's this nutritionist that is the nutritionist for the Patriots. And he talks about their post-training, like they go out and they hit the field and they do all their training and stuff like that. He's got smoothies lined up for them with names on them. And these smoothies have very little protein. They're more, you know, fruit-based to restore that glucose and glycogen so the body doesn't start feeding off itself.
Weird. My coach, football coach at halftime, always would give us oranges.
Yeah.
I never knew why until now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, right? That may be anecdotal, but it was something that in high school, I used to play high school basketball. And when you'd go to a tournament, you'd see that the people who went out and had pizza for lunch, like at a big pizza party, and then the difference between those guys in the second half or coming back to the tournament versus right. The people who, I mean, still eating out, but eating Subway rather than pizza, you notice a world of a difference between how they're acting, or even for the second half, like in the same game, if you have orange slices at halftime, you have more energy for the second half of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easier digested. Like a lot of up to 35% of your blood supply can go, or sorry, 23% of your blood supply, I believe is the accurate number, can go to your digestive system for digestion, right? So your gastrointestinal tract draws that kind of, that's why for years, guys growing up, they'd say, don't eat a big meal and then go swimming
right.
because of the potentiality of cramping.
Yeah.
So this is it, like orange slices, like those things, they're very easily assimilated by the body. They don't create a lot of digestive, you know, effort, or they don't need a lot of digestive effort, and they fuel the right spots. And plus, I mean, anything with vitamins and minerals in it, the body's going to want, right? Because again, like I'll go back to that box. If there's a diamond in the box, you're going to tear open the box. But if the box is there and it's pretty much empty, or you know it's empty, there's nothing in it, then you're not going to bother to open it. And this is where like a lot of those empty calories and stuff, yeah, they're fuel, but the body still has to process it. And like we talked about in previous podcasts, when your body's adrenalized and you're in flight or fight mode, your body couldn't give a shit about food. Like it just doesn't think that way. It's not it's not in digestive mode. That's why. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I want to circle back to intermittent fasting and more, cause I shouldn't say I'm not sold, but isn't the point of intermittent fasting is to get rid of your glycogen stores or whatever so you produce the ketones? So wouldn't it make sense to do the workout fasted because you're burning them up more?
Intermittent,
you know what I mean?
Well, intermittent fasting isn't necessarily a ketogenic thing. A lot of
right?
Yeah. What it does is it enhances your body's, like, it's like,
right.
It's like working in a very loud environment, Greg, and then taking a day off and then going back to the loud environment. You can almost focus a little bit more because you have that downtime. Like you're just not overstimulated. If anybody in this group has ever spent more than 3 or 4 days in Vegas, you'll understand what I mean. It just, right. After a while, it just like, it's just
too much,
too much,
too much. Yeah.
And isn't there a lot of benefits for your growth hormone level? So in the morning, I read up a bit on it. So I guess in the early hours of the morning, you get a surge of growth hormones. And then when you eat, when you break the fast, you kind of break that up. But if you keep your fast, you keep those benefits. So that's why they say like it keeps you younger and stuff like that. If you read it up online. Yeah.
I mean, think of the term itself. It's not breakfast. It's break fast.
Right. Yeah.
So, you
said that to me before, man. And I was like, my mind was blown. I'm like, wow. That's what they call break fast. What?
Yeah. It's just one of these things, guys. Like, you don't have to eat as soon as you get up, but this is what the establishment wants us. Right? Because if you get up and you start eating earlier, then chances are you're going to eat more food during the day. So your caloric intake is going to go up, which means you're going to buy more groceries. So that's where a lot of the thinking is. There's a lot of cultures out there that don't eat when they get up. They eat later in the day. And then, you know, they may have supper at like 9 o'clock at night. I know I've worked with this gentleman from Morocco. And, you know, in Morocco, they eat at like 11 o'clock at night, and then they go out and walk around until about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then they go to bed, and then they get up for work the next day, and they they eat their heavier, more protein rich meal in the afternoon before they have their 3 hour siesta. So that's really their recuperative sleep, because they sleep through the heat of the afternoon. Then they get up, they go back to work for another couple of hours. Then they come home, and, you know, Morocco was, you know, one of the murder capitals of the world, but in terms of, you know, diabetes and heart disease and those other chronic issues that we're dealing with, it's very low. And other cultures like that as well, Mediterranean, you know, restaurants in the Mediterranean often don't open until 9 o'clock at night. So
it really reminds me of the time I spent in Honduras. Like, we worked really hard when we were down there. We built water storage units and latrines and put on clinics and stuff. Sweet. But it was something that, yeah, I noticed culturally that they were sort of slow to rise. First thing in the morning, we were like, all right, we're ready. Sort of in Western culture, we're let's go, let's do this. 8 o'clock in the morning, we're going to go, hit it hard. Whereas they were like, yeah, we're going to have a coffee. We're going to have a little naan bread. We're going to eat just a little bit. Okay, in another hour or two, we'll stop, have something to eat. And it was more casual and more slow going. Whereas I find culturally, we tend to constantly like push. We're all about the hustle lifestyle. And that's why we've sort of broken everything down into these steps. It's like, okay, you eat first thing because you're not going to have energy. If you're hustling till 2 o'clock, then okay, you get to eat again.
Right.
Yeah. And eating itself is inflammatory. Like, you're introducing foods with pathogens and all these things. Like, you have no idea how much this 31 feet of digestive hose, this living entity inside of us, needs to break apart. So we'll get back to the whole, you know, timing of your food, right? Everybody is a different mood, right? I get on here and I was ready to chew Greg's head off because of computer issues. And, you know, at the end of the day, guys, like, and this is it, like, I've got a different circadian rhythm. I'm up at 4:30 in the morning and I'm ready to rock and roll. And that's just, it's who I am. Yeah. And I was watching this cool, thing on Netflix, documentary, and it was all about genes and things like this and how some people have a gene expression that only allows them to, the need to sleep 4 hours in the evening. And it's an actual gene that you can turn on and off. Like, they've isolated this gene. So everybody's a little different that way, but it's the circadian rhythm. So, but as much as we do have those differences, we are still mammals and we're still omnivores, right? So really, I guess what I want to get into in this podcast, like, there's so many other avenues, like with so many other podcasts we can jump into, but really, if we get down to the fundamental human element of it, so say we call this the human diet, all right? We get up in the morning. During the day, guys, our bodies, and as Joel mentioned, right, our bodies are very hormonally different in the morning than we are in the evening. All right. In the morning, like when you sleep, for example, you've got growth hormone, testosterone, progesterone, like all these things start to manifest themselves at night because that's when you heal. All right. And then they're peaked in the morning. Testosterone, everything like that, everything's at its peak in the morning. And then there's the decline as the day goes on. So what we need to start looking at is the day. The day itself is not where we're going to fix anything. Like, you cannot fix a car when you're driving it. So essentially it's the commune, right? The day, the body is focused on movement, avoiding predators, minimizing damage. So think of it like driving your car to the office. So the job of the body is to get from the bed back to the bed. And during the day, we're fueling that process. So I like to call the daytime the herbivore time, because when you watch a herbivore eat, right? When you watch a gazelle eat, a cow, a horse, any mammal
eating,
they're grazing. Constantly eating. They're grazing all day, but they're also alert. They're standing, they're awake. When you watch a carnivore eat, the carnivore goes to sleep soon afterwards, rests, falls over, lays down. Okay. Because of the immense digestive processes that are associated to breaking down other animals' fascia, their flesh, their right. So this is kind of what I'm getting into, is that, and I've seen this in some of the practices with previously in working with companies, because we were working with a situation called presenteeism, where employees after the time of 2 o'clock in the afternoon are useless as tits on a bull. Like, they just sit there and basically drool and try and stay awake until the Fred Flintstone whistle blows.
Yeah, I was gonna say this guy.
That's me.
So I worked with a few of them and convinced them to go vegetarian, go plant-based during the day. And so when they went for their sub, instead of having a meatball sub, they had just a veggie sub. And man, they could not believe the energy difference, because a lot of us were thinking carbohydrates were making us tired. And here, guys, it's really going to friggin' blow your mind. In China, okay, recently, in 2000, China wasn't even on the radar for type 2 diabetes, okay? In 2000, and I think it was 17 or 18, they climbed to the top of the charts, all right? One in every 8,000 was being diagnosed with diabetes, okay? Wow. Over lesser than a 20-year time frame, they jumped from, you know, minor leagues to major leagues. And here in Canada and the U.S. and I think Great Britain, we're one in every 7,000. So that's a massive jump in a very short period of time. So China started to look into it because they see diabetes as crippling the economy. It's decimating the workforce. It's a huge, it's a parasite. So they started to look at, of course, carbohydrates, and they started to say, okay, well, it must be the rice that we're eating. And then, you know, people started to shake their head a little bit. Well, we've been eating rice since we've been Chinese. Why is it over the last 17 years, 18 years that this has been such an issue? What has changed in the rice? And truth is, it's a little bit more refined, but not a whole lot has changed. Mm. What they did notice was the increase in protein that they've had over the last 20 years. They've had almost a 40% increase in protein intake, both through chicken, beef, and pork. And what's happened is they've added that protein to their pre-existing carbohydrates. So they've created this concoction, so the Western influence. So what they did is they separated the two. So they used a large portion of rice, and they saw the insulin spike, and the insulin spike was, you know, it was regulated. It was very curvy. It was exactly the way it should react. The same with protein. When you eat protein, you get a mild insulin reaction. You put the two of them together in those proportions, because Chinese, when you eat legitimate or authentic Chinese food, there's very small amounts of protein, right? You know, in some flavoring and things like that, like chicken fried rice would have very little chicken in it, not enough to cause that issue.
So not too big breasts of chicken.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So what they found is you add enough protein to that concoction and you can get upwards of about a 500% increase in what's called your IGF-1 insulin like growth factor. All right. Which is massive. So these people are becoming insulin resistant because of the fact that now insulin is massive. They're using truckloads of it and their bodies just aren't used to handling it. It's brand new to them, right? The same way as if you introduce alcohol to an Aboriginal population, there's going to be a much higher probability of alcohol abuse and issues, right? Okay. So anyway, that's kind of the premise behind it. So in doing this, what that study revealed to me is that, okay, we've got to maybe separate these two and see if we can get the body to absorb them a little better. So at the end of the day, you guys have all heard me talk about macros. We need a certain amount of macros at the end of the day. And that's true. And that's great that everybody's realizing that, but we never really thought, how does the body absorb those macros? We're just giving it to them. So imagine you guys giving me a computer and saying, okay, Neil, you need to do this. Right? Has anybody seen that scene from Zoolander where they're beating on the computer?
It's inside the computer.
Right? Right? And then, but that's how the body is starting to look at the food, is we're throwing everything together. And we've got a compromised digestive system. We're older. We've dealt with environmental things. We've had medications. We've had like all of these things, guys. So by separating those two families, thinking of your day in terms of a herbivore part of your day and a carnivore part of your day, it's absolutely crazy. And intermittent fasting actually supports this, because what it's showing people is that they need less protein than what they've been actually taught. And all you need during the day is an adequate amount of plasma, like amino acids circulating in your bloodstream to prevent muscle breakdown. And as we've discussed in regards to plant-based versus carnivore, right? Plant-based is incredible. Plant-based protein is incredible for maintaining muscle mass. It's incredible for keeping inflammation down. It's incredible for performance, but it's not incredible for building, right? All these clowns that are on there at 315 pounds of ripped mass, they didn't get there by being plant-based. They're maintaining it and maybe even getting stronger, but they're not adding actual muscle tissue. Right. They didn't create that mass through that. They're supporting it through that. So again, this is something that I've been toying with for the last 10 years is, you know, going at that level. And that's where I'm looking at eventually maybe bringing the meal planning is, okay, let's start to feed people more in the morning and more protein rich in the evening. So you have that recovery meal.
I got a question here for you, Neil. Is it because the plant-based protein doesn't have the full amino acid profile like a meat-based protein would?
It does to a certain extent. There's two of them that are missing, and but the thing is they can be substituted, and you know, and also the B12 issue. See, B12 is not something that's found in the animal flesh.
Right. The animal bacteria, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a bacteria that the animal creates from eating plant-based. So we eat vegetarians to get B12.
Okay. Cause I was going to say if someone wanted to go more plant-based, but still wanted to build more muscle, couldn't you add a amino acid supplement to kind of complete the protein to help with this?
Yeah, you could, but I mean, they're still very complete. Like there's trace amounts of amino acids or the profile's a little different. But honestly, like you could sustain, it's amazing to sustain muscle mass. It's really, really, and what it does too, is it creates that avenue where your body's supported in terms of glucose. So you're getting adequate glucose, you're not carbohydrate phobic. And then at nighttime you can eat and it creates responsible use, because the amount of protein that we're eating all day long, like getting chicken breasts at lunch and a bunch of eggs at breakfast and stuff like that, there's a large potential that that's actually being burnt. It's not being used. So we may think we're getting, you know, 245 grams of protein, but really we could be only getting the 4 ounces of protein that we're getting in the last meal. So the 4 ounces of chicken breast that represents 30 grams of protein, we may only be getting that from the last meal. Whereas if we took the eggs and we took the Greek yogurt or cottage cheese, and we had that chicken breast and we ate that in the evening, the body would take all of that and use it instead of burning it during the day, because it's in a movement type. Like, so if you were freezing and you needed calories and I gave you mahogany, you'd burn the mahogany.
Rich mahogany?
Right. My house smells of rich mahogany and leather bound books.
I had to, sorry.
Ron Burgundy. You can't beat it.
So theoretically, what would happen if you went strictly complex carbohydrates until, say, 5 p.m., 6 p.m. in the evening time, and then went and only had protein? So if you had things like rice and fruit and stuff all through more often throughout the day, what would happen if you just had that up until supper, and then you have your protein, go to bed, do it all over?
From what I've seen, Ben, and this is right now, it's just, you know, from what I've seen, it's phenomenal. Like I've reduced my protein. Like when I was bodybuilding at lesser weight than I am right now, I was eating 300 plus grams of protein and having shakes in between. I had to get protein, I always felt inflamed. And the burning of protein, guys, this is where uric acid comes in. This is where the kidney function gets compromised, because burning protein, going through a process called gluconeogenesis, can be very toxic to the body, right? It'd be like burning a spare tire to heat your house. You get great heat. It's a great source of calories, and calories, that's all they are. It's a unit of heat. But the byproduct would asphyxiate you. And this is where burning protein can be very toxic to the system, whereas using protein is immensely beneficial. So we've kind of cluttered those two terms together, and burning is not using. I'm sitting in the chair, right? That's using it. But if I was burning the chair for heat, it's burning it. It's two different things. So that's kind of what we're getting down to. Ironically, it was Simply for Life, Ben, that kind of brought this into the forefront for me, because what I started to realize is that, okay, by cutting carbohydrates in the evening for people and seeing the effects that it's having on insulin and, you know, their body being able to recover at night by just giving them protein and some veggies, you know, non-starchy veggies, you know, leafy greens and things like that. Wow, that's incredible. So this is kind of just taking it one step further and saying, okay, well, what if we remove the protein during the day, the plant, the animal-based protein? Like I could have two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the morning and end up with about 25 grams of protein. Yeah. So it's not like you're eliminating protein. You're just not mixing families. The body has a very difficult time mixing or trying to break down an animal-based product and a plant-based product. It's very cool when you think about it. Like nature sets it up that way. You know, can you name me a carbohydrate that's high in fat?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like a fruit. A fruit has very low fat.
What about nuts? Aren't they high in carbs?
No, they're low in carbs and high in fat.
My bad.
Yep. No. But that's what people know out there. Like an avocado is a fruit, but it's a high fat fruit. And guess what? There's no carbs. So we've got a lot of combination going on here. So we have the Canadian government telling us that we need a multitude of items on our plate at one time. And it's like listening to three conversations at the same time. You know, they can argue that they told you. So, you know, three people are telling you different things and none of that shit gets done. Yeah. And then they get mad at you because, well, I told you, but they didn't tell you in a way that you could actually understand. And I think that's why obesity being classed as malnutrition, I think, guys, you know, a big part of our body not getting the food, not getting the nutrients from the food is in part the way that we're introducing it. Like we discussed previously in regards to water, by drinking more water, you're enhancing the nutrient availability of your food, right? Because water-soluble nutrients, you're drinking more water gets into the cell and carries the nutrition with it. So if you're better hydrated, you're getting more from that apple that you didn't need to buy organically,
I got a question for that water too when you're done. Okay. I just wanna, don't lose your thought because I wanted to ask now because you're rant going, but I heard.
You were going to say ranting, weren't you?
I was going to say it. You were enlightening us better.
Yes.
Honestly, you're onto something like amazing. I have like kind of tingles. I'm going to try this. I really am. But with water, I've heard this. I don't tell me. I'm probably wrong because I'm wrong a lot. But mixing water with food can dilute your stomach acid. Then yet your body has to. So is that real?
Yeah.
It can. On a wives' tale?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. It can force the food into like it dilutes the digestive juices. The acid.
So is it bad then to do that, or would you?
Well, no, to sip. I mean, I don't want you choking on your meal or anything like that. But
I suppose though, but if you eat an apple, I don't have to drink a glass of water after. It's tons of water in it. I don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, sipping on water while you're eating a meal is great. Like if I watch my dog eat, the dog doesn't eat and drink at the same time. It'll eat and then it'll have water afterwards. But eating and drinking at the same time, you know, it can.
Yeah, I've always found it weird. I've never been the type of person to be able to like sip away at a water bottle all day. It's like I come to a time when I'm thirsty and then I drink like a liter and a half and then I move on with my day. Like that's how I get my water in big
swing. Go.
Yeah. Ben's an acute water drinker. And again, everybody's got a different metabolism that way. But the thing is that what that could do is flush a lot of stuff out, because when you go up to a toilet bowl, say for example, and you have a bucket of water and you pour it in aggressively, you just dump it in, the toilet flushes. There's a lot of water moving through. But if you take that water bucket and you pour it in slowly, the basin level never changes, but the water volume is still dealt with, right? So by you drinking too much water, and that's where the scary, you know, social media posts and things like that, you know, have happened regarding people drinking too much water.
Yeah.
And really it's been too much water at one time. Now, again, like water, that's a great example, Ben, water being a macronutrient really important. So if I drink all my water at once, that's dangerous. But if I drank that same volume of water and spread it out, it's less dangerous. So really spreading your food out throughout the day and timing it differently can mean everything to your body in regards to it being pissed off that you took the food in and not ready to absorb it and not getting the nutrients from it because it's not ready. It's not listening. It's not receptive, right? You are not what you eat. You are what you use. So if you wait for that opportune time and you introduce the food properly and the right food, then you're going to get higher, right? Permeability. So, you know, information is useless without comprehension and food is useless without absorption. And we're malabsorbing our food and we're all becoming fat because of it. And we're all becoming inflamed because the food is getting in our butt and passing out.
In our butt?
Of the butt.
In our gut or our butt?
Oh no, it's entering our butt into our large intestine, right? Our bowel. And it's not being absorbed on the way down. So we're basically just shitting our food out. And people get upset that they're not pooping two or three times a day. Like, what's wrong with me? I'm like, dude, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it means you're using more of it. Right. So if you're defecating, you know, a couple, you know, once every day or once every couple of days, that's a good thing, guys. That's not, that means you're not wasting as much.
I'm fully on board with this. I'm going to try this, but just an example. So I usually skip my breakfast and don't eat until lunch. And I have 4 hard-boiled eggs with a bunch of broccoli and an apple. Should I cut the eggs out and just eat broccoli and apple?
Well, you're going to need starches and stuff.
Yeah, you've got no carbs there.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate carbs.
Right? No. And Greg, you're the everyday person. You're the person out there. So you remove carbs from your diet, and the body now sees carbs as a commodity, as a scarcity. So when you introduce carbs, your body's going to start storing it. You have enzymes that break down. You have amylase, protease, lipase. Like, these things break down fats, proteins, carbohydrates. Now, when you remove your carbs from your diet, then what happens is the glands that release these carbs, they get lazy. The same way as if you don't use your arms start to atrophy. So these things start to atrophy. And then we've seen it with Atkins. You go extraordinarily long amounts of time without carbohydrates, and then you introduce the carbohydrates. Holy shit. Like, it could take weeks or months for the body to start learning how to break carbohydrates down again. Meanwhile, all of that is being converted into fat, and you're becoming insulin resistant because the whole mechanism's off, right? It'd be like Joel not training his upper body for, you know, a year and a half, and then going into the gym and trying to lift the weights that he used to lift when he was training his upper body, and he'd be crippled.
So, but isn't an apple a carb, or like, is that not enough?
It is, but it's not. See, fruit, and again, like, this is the scope that Insight goes into. Fruit is 100% broken down by your liver. Starch, like potato, rice, pasta, bread, it's only about 20% broken down by the liver. The other 80% is by the muscle. So, like, I always talk to people in regards to diabetes. Like, you know, they have low blood sugar, and the organ that regulates blood sugar is your liver. The organ that regulates muscle glucose is your muscle. All right. So eating starch to regulate a blood glucose problem is kind of useless, because 20% of it goes to the liver, and the other 80% goes to the muscle, goes to, like, and that's why we're getting so much storage. We're eating so many starch-based carbohydrates and not enough fruit-based carbohydrates. So if your liver is the priority, and you need 20, say we'll use 100 grams of glucose. So for every 100 grams of starch that you eat, your liver only gets 20 grams of that. Right? Or 80, sorry, every 80 grams, 20 grams. Anyway, you guys get the drift. So you're going to need to eat a shit ton of starch in order to fill your liver.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, none of us are moving around that much to need that much muscle glucose. That's fuel for your muscle.
Right.
So where does that go? That goes as body fat.
Right to your gut.
Right? Whereas if you eat fruit in between your meals, this phenomenon, this whole grazing mindset, it's a great regulatory process for your blood glucose, which means that you're going to need less starches because you're getting more ROI. Like, it's hitting it right on the head. So one apple is giving you more than, you know, 2 bagels in regards to liver glucose. So by keeping your liver satisfied in between, it's preventing you from overeating starches when you should be eating starches. So ideally, like, getting up and having a bowl of oatmeal, for example, to get fuel and some berries and things in it, like a, you know, a plant-based breakfast. And it gets fuel to the muscle and gets electricity. And I have a video that I talk about this, how the different systems of the body and stuff. I posted one to the Insight group this morning, how we have, like an automobile, we have an electrical system and we have a propulsion system, right? And the majority of us today are dealing with electrical issues, cellular issues, neurological issues, right? None of us are wasting away. None of us are, you know, deprived of fat. Every single one of us in this group has at least 20 or 30 pounds that they could draw from. So it's not a
fat. I might have a little bit more.
Maybe some, maybe a little bit more. But for the most of us, it's not a fuel issue. It's an electrical issue. So believe it or not, we're not getting enough fruit in our diet. We're not focusing on the actual energy. And it's like pulling your vehicle into the gas station when your battery's dead and dumping $30 worth of fuel in your tank.
It's not going to fix your problem.
It's not going to fix your problem.
So then, okay, so I eat my broccoli, my apple. I should introduce some sort of non-starchy carb?
No, starchy carb. Yeah.
Starchy carb.
Yeah. Starch, Greg, it fuels your muscle. It fuels your movement.
Right.
So when you think about you moving around during the day, Just cognitive functioning. Like your brain uses 25% of your glucose.
Or what marathoners do. Marathoners eat a huge meal of carbohydrates.
Yeah. Yep. To try and fuel get that skeletal muscle saturated with what's called glycogen. What right. circulates in your blood is glucose. What's actually in the muscle, the shit you actually use, is called glycogen, right? And starch is a phenomenal, like the muscle has enzymes. Like when you eat starch in your face, when you put it in your mouth, and Greg's going to laugh at this because he's got the
mentality of a 12-year-old.
Right? So when you masticate food.
Oh.
Just nice. Give him a second. Yeah, give him nice. A second. Let that soak in.
Oh, well done.
Okay. All right. So when you break food down, in your mouth, you have an enzyme that's produced in your mouth, salivatory amylase. So starches actually start to break down in your mouth so that the body can get the glucose into the bloodstream, and then the muscles can convert the glucose into glycogen, right? The glycogen is what's actually in the muscle. So when your blood glucose levels drop, it's got nothing to do with your muscles. Right? It's got everything to do with your liver. And anyway, I go into this and I coach on it all the time. But if your liver has enough glucose in it, then it will, right? Or glycogen from fruit, then it will regulate and you'll never have a hypoglycemic moment unless you've totally depleted your muscles of glucose and your adrenaline kicks in. And then your adrenaline kicks the insulin out, the blood glucose out into the bloodstream. And then you can rock and roll. You can evade predators. But the thing is afterwards, you'll crash big time because now your liver doesn't have the glucose it needs to run your brain, your heart, all of these things. So then the liver kicks out enzymes to break your muscle down. And that's what we were talking about earlier in regards to the importance of fruit after training. Is that making sense? Like, dude, really good, it's so deep and it's got so many different layers to it.
Very interesting, though.
I feel like Neil now, I don't even know how to eat anymore.
No, but it's it definitely changes the way I see things. Like I've been eating, like you said, mixed, veggies and meat throughout the day, and I actually stop after supper.
Yeah,
I may try this out. I may try this exactly.
And it's really like it sounds in theory, it's really complicated. Like in terms of like when we talk about it like this, but yep. If you look at it this way, is during the day, like think about like. Sunburns, for example, we're in that time of year where we have sunburns. And when does a sunburn present itself? Like when you're burnt by the sun, when does it hurt the most? When does it turn red? When does the heat kick in?
At the end of the day.
Usually at night, before you go to bed.
Right? So true. If you have a fever, if your body's fighting something like a virus or bacteria, when does the fever tend to spike?
Before you go to bed. Or in bed, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the fever's representation of your body healing. It's the actual body going to work. So guys, this is what I'm trying to get people to understand is during the day, your body's not working. You're on the way to work. When you go to sleep, when you lay down, that's when your body goes to work. That's when Humpty Dumpty puts that's when Humpty Dumpty gets put back together again. And we're not using protein properly. We're burning a large percentage of because again, animal-based protein is, it can't be converted. Plant-based protein always comes with a carbohydrate. Like I eat a cup of beans, I get 23 grams of carbohydrates and about 13 to 16 grams of protein. So it's ambidextrous. The body doesn't have to convert shit. It's got carbs if it wants to use the carbs, and it's got protein if it wants to use the protein. It doesn't have to go through gluconeogenesis. Whereas if I eat a piece of meat, there's no carbs to it. So if that meat gets turned into glucose, I get to magically change that into glucose. And that's the danger. Number one, I don't want my body familiar with how to eat itself. I don't want to train it to do that, right? So that it becomes a default. And two, the byproduct of that, right? I would much rather drink from a styrofoam cup than burn a styrofoam cup,
right?
So I think this is where, like, you see, like, these carnivores that are out there right now and how they're talking about, wow, my inflammation and the radical changes that go on with carnivores. You see the same with vegans, plant-based, like strict vegans. Wow, the inflammation, everything's gone because they chose one side or the other. They're not banging the two together.
Right.
But yet we're so focused on the zealotry of it and the religious of it. This is right, or that's wrong and that's wrong. We're missing this whole beautiful center.
Well, yeah, you'd get looked at weird if you had, just meat for dinner. They'd be like, right. "What do you? Where's your veggie? Where's your potatoes?" Yeah, and you're like,
Yeah. Or just veggies.
Yeah. Right. It's like, but I mean, you know, that's an indicator that we're doing something right, is when, you know, you need to do different to be different, and we need to be different because the majority of us are walking slowly into this horrible thing, you know, these chronic illnesses. So, you know, and we're scared to death of our food, but really we're only scared of the food because we don't understand it. And what Insight is trying to do, what we're trying to do, is help people understand their food a little better, how it relates to their bodies and their lifestyle. If we can get those three connected, guys, then we're going to start to see that food is here to help us. And it's not about eliminating shit. It's about using it properly.
Right?
I mean, look at us, you know, and throughout history, eliminating populations and people with different skin colors and stuff like this, because we didn't understand them, right? We didn't see how they can benefit us and how we can work simultaneously and synergistically. We're discriminating foods.
Yep. Right? I got a question about fat too. We talked about carbs and protein a lot. We didn't talk about fat a lot. Should I keep my fat, my healthy fats with my meat at the end of the day and not mix them with the carbs, or?
Right. And again, we get into the, like, typically if you eat a plant-based diet during the day, your body, like, there's not a whole lot of need for fats because of the fact that you're more of a carbohydrate burning individual. Right.
Right.
But fats are recuperative. So I easily, how I talk to people about that is I keep my plant fats with my plants and I keep my animal fats with my animals.
Right.
Right. So at night, like, you know, because at the end of the day, I need a certain amount of fats for repair and cell protection and, you know, neurological protection because of the Maynard sheath and all this stuff. So in the morning, like, I'll have my plant, I'll have avocado, or I'll have coconut oil and things like that. But in the evening, you know, I might fry my hamburger up, or, you know, and put some butter on it or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I try to keep my family separate.
Yeah.
And again, it goes to that whole biochemical circadian rhythm that we have, is in the evening, our biochemistry changes. And another truth to this too is that when you wake up in the morning, you have more insulin sensitivity, meaning that your body needs less insulin to partition food and absorb it into the cells. Whereas if you eat that same carbohydrate before going to bed, you need a lot more insulin to get it to where it's going. And insulin is what we're trying to manage. We don't want to overuse insulin because then we end up tanking our pancreas, or we become insulin resistant. Right? So it makes sense, right? So get up in the morning, we fuel our vehicles before we go on the drive, and then we arrive into the garage with an empty tank, and the little gremlins go to work. And then we get up in the morning and we fuel our tank up before we take the commute to work. It's right. We do it every day, but we do it unconsciously.
Right.
Very scratching his head.
My mind is just like, it hurts. It's just blown. It's to pieces.
Right.
I'm really gonna try this. So I'm actually gonna do this. I'll be your guinea pig.
I'll try it too, actually.
It's liberating, and it allows you to, like, again, it's that human identity. Like, you don't have to really choose what camp. Like, should I be keto or, like, you know, it seems to be the default these times. But it's good, though, because it brings the information to the forefront. It gets people thinking about it. I posted an article or a blurb to the Insight group in regards to what keto has taught me, right? And it's taught me that we don't need as much protein. I mean, when you're in ketogenic, following a ketogenic diet, you're only 20% protein of your daily caloric intake. The other 70% is carbohydrates, or fat, sorry, and 10%, 5% is low with carbs. So really, how much do we need protein? And, you know, the truth is that myself now at just over 190 pounds, I can function with 100 to 125 grams of protein a day and grow muscle. Right. I mean, I'll be posting videos to the group and even into the public and on YouTube of me doing talks probably about, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I was about 60 pounds lighter than I am right now. Wow. I was plant-based then. I wasn't eating any animal source whatsoever. I was 100% plant-based, but then I started talking about this and getting into it. So I started to apply protein, animal-based protein, in my evenings. So I'd get, you know, I'd sit down and have, you know, ground beef at supper time. And then a little later, maybe have some cottage cheese. And, you know, so I graze. I wouldn't stop eating. I'd stop eating when I went to bed, but I'd change my right? And so from 2017 to 2020 right now, I've gone from about 156 pounds and I'm about 193. And right. It allowed my body to adapt without all the inflammation and fat gain and stuff. It gave the body what it need and it understood how to use it because I was giving it to it at the right time.
So what's the, like a rule of thumb? I remember starting working out when I was young. All that I wanted, I just wanted to bulk. I wanted to be big, big arms. So we used to say like 2 grams of protein per pound, but I know now that's not necessary. But like, what number do you go for?
The gold standard is about like
0.2.
No, the gold standard, like per lean body mass, right? So you don't need to feed your overall weight because there's fat and stuff like that. So you want to look at kind of like your lean body mass. So like, and then go about 0.75 grams of protein for that. That's kind of the gold standard right now. So for me, like my lean body mass would be about 160 to 170 pounds, say. And then I you know, 0.7 times that by 0.75. And that gives you your approximate protein intake that you need to be anabolic and stay at a positive nitrogen balance. Now I get the majority of that in the evening. You know, with the plant-based eating, I might get 50 grams in the span of a day. And then the rest of it, so the other 75 to 100 grams comes from my evening, my meal, and then my evening snack.
Right. That makes way more sense too, because it's really hard to do too. And that's why the protein companies make so much money, because they advertise as such, right?
Exactly. Oh, yep. But I mean,
I mentioned in different podcasts that they did a study on that they're basically saying you're making expensive pee with those extra protein shakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does. It's so refined that it gets converted into glucose for the most part anyway. But ideally, I mean, Ben can attest to this because the amount of meal plans and things that we put out, but the biggest pain in the ass is finding protein and getting protein in during the day. Imagine if you needed to graze all day and you went to work with a bag of food, and you had apples and bananas and some whole grain crackers and some nuts and things like that. And you just grazed on that all day. And then by the end of the day, you've been eating all day. So at the end of the day, you're not ready to eat the northbound end of a southbound skunk because your blood glucose has been regulated, right? And you've been eating all day. So psychologically, and your gut is full, but not overcapacitated with, you know, breaking down of the stuff. You're just gradually introducing it throughout the day. And then you come home and you end the day with the successful kill, right? I know it sounds harsh, but, you know, eat like makes like. So you have your animal-based products in the evening. And your body goes to sleep because it needs to set aside all other activities so that it can focus on the breakdown and digestion of the food, right? And let it go slip through the small intestine and get to the large intestine. Anyway, it's just like, it's a magical dance that we don't think about. But when you look in terms of evolution, it kind of makes sense. We would track prey for days and we would eat and forage along the way to keep our energy up and our wits about us, right?
I love it.
Guts wouldn't be full.
Makes a lot of sense, actually, to be honest.
And then No, go ahead, Joel.
I was just saying, not only it's better for us, but it also simplifies it so much more. It's so much easier this way.
Right?
Really?
But it's like telling people that the world may not be flat. Like everybody is so friggin' fixated on getting their meals together and saying, yeah, don't
it's even flat.
That's my Santa Claus. That's my Santa. What do you mean he's not real?
Wow. Hey, look, so, but nuts, they're still considered plant-based. So I could have those with my plant-based meal during the day.
What do you mean?
So if I had broccoli, nuts, some potatoes.
Yeah.
And an apple, I'd be good.
Yeah.
And then my eggs later and maybe something else.
Yeah.
Can I have cheese with my meats?
Nope.
No cheese? Damn it.
No. I mean, why? Like, right? You can have cheese later on in the day, but that's just a cultural thing. Like, I have a...
I just like cheese a lot.
Right? Yeah. But you can eat it at night.
Okay. But don't eat it with the meats? Separate it?
No. Go ahead. Why wouldn't you eat with the meats?
Okay. Yeah. That's what I mean. Animal. Yeah. So I can have it like a cheeseburger, but just the burger with cheese on it.
Right.
I'm going to do this. It sounds really easy to do. And like, I'm going to like this.
Keto has it right. And plant-based has it right. They both have a right, but they're just not paying attention to the organism, us. Like the science is solid, guys, but they just don't think beyond their laboratory tests and their religion is okay. Yeah, we're right. But how does it apply to the human being? And, you know, outside of morality, I think it's pretty friggin' brilliant to be able to tell people that you can cut your grocery bill by 20% because you're not buying a shit ton of meat because you're using it better. You're not killing animals, you know,
senselessly.
You're actually using it less. So your meat consumption, animal product consumption goes down exponentially, but we're not sacrificing ourselves in the meantime. And we're able to support plant-based businesses. You know, we're the farmer, the horticulturist, the person who's growing plants versus the person who's, keeping cows. We keep everybody in business. Everybody's happy. And it becomes a very natural, balanced society. It's pretty outlandish. But I mean, and this is honestly, guys, this is the first time I've ever really talked about it in a public forum, other than a few acute businesses. And it was more like me, the mad scientist, like, hey, I'm going
to brought your tin hat. Right?
Yeah. I'm going to figure out how this, you know, I'm going to put this to practice. So it was kind of like a mini experiment, and the weight loss and the inflammation and all the stuff that people were experiencing. It was pretty cool.
Man, we're going to call it the Neil diet. And you just, we hate the word diet though. The Neil treat reward meal. Yeah. Neil reward meal. It rhymes.
No, that sounds dirty.
Oh, great. No,
seriously, it does sound like something that I've never sort of through the years, I've tried different things. I've tried to eat different things at different times. Went through a period of my life where it was like, okay, I need all three macros. I need protein, carb, veggie, or fruit every single meal. And it just wasn't feasible. One, it's expensive. Two, it just, you can't do that every single meal. So I think focusing on complex carbohydrates and focusing on more starchy foods throughout the day and then getting your carbs at night. I even noticed that when I started eating more meat, but I would just eat like in the evening time and just eat meat, I felt better. Yeah. So I think I'm going to go back to that and see what the difference is, because even in the morning, I'm eating eggs right now, where I would much rather eat something like a bowl of cereal, some complex
oats or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Some just rice, basically the equivalent thereof. Puffed rice,
I guess. And eating carbs at night. And we've seen it, they've done, blood labs and they've seen the inflammation, they've seen the insulin results after eating, a bowl of oatmeal in the evening versus that same individual, eating a bowl of oatmeal earlier in the day, and the insulin response is definitely different. There's a marked change. So again, meat is mildly insulinogenic. When you eat meat, there's a sense of euphoria that's associated to it. There's a satiety to it. It's highly thermogenic, meaning it increases body core temperature. The body actually, has to work to break it down. But the thing is that it's when you go to sleep for 6 or 8 hours, there's nothing getting in the way of it. It's just digesting. And then the next day, and this is linked to like colon and rectal cancer as well, like the T. Colin Campbell study done in the China study years ago, saying that people that have a higher meat intake, so more affluent Chinese, had a higher incidence of colon cancer and prostate cancer and things like that, than the more downtrodden that didn't have the access to meat. But what they failed to look at was the fact that the carbs were still involved in the insulin. But imagine this, guys, and this is how I explain it to people in terms of digestive processes, is that if you eat meat at night, the meat breaks down and digests through the small intestine, gets to the large intestine, settles in the bowel. And then you spend the rest of the day eating fibrous foods, enzyme-rich foods. Right. Imagine a tube and you can see through the tube and you've got these scrubbing bubbles coming down and behind after all the hard work and, breaking down of muscle tissue and the highly acidic environment that it needs and stuff like that. So it's almost like these scrubbing, massaging bubbles come down through the digestive system, add the bulk that is needed in the bowel, because the bowel is a volume based organ, adds the roughage and the insoluble fiber, the insoluble fiber all goes down and then removes all of the toxic sludge. Like carnivores have very short digestive systems, right? Very much like our large intestine. Our large intestine is very much shorter than our small intestine. Small intestine is smaller in circumference, but it's very, very long and complex, like a cow's digestive system or a herbivore's digestive system. It's there to pull out all of the vitamins and minerals and break down the complexity of these plant-based products. So by timing it better, you're getting this system now where the meat isn't resting in the colon with all kinds of fiber and sitting there and putrefying and being incredibly acid, because we've all heard about the alkaline and how, you know, the alkaline diet and how cancers can't form in an alkaline environment and blah, blah, blah. It creates more alkalinity that way. It creates more balance, right? We still need to be acidic. Our stomachs and crows, and I believe wolves, have three animals with the most acidic stomachs to be able to break down animal product. That's the reason why. So a lot of us, because we're eating these things poorly, these stomach acids, they're out of flux. A lot of us aren't acidic enough to be able to break this stuff down because we're afraid of meats and we're not eating the meats properly. We're eating meats and carbs together, and the two of them are broken down very, very different. They require totally different enzymes.
Super interesting.
Is it cool? Yeah.
Man, it's like, I'm doing this. I'm incorporating this in my diet, like starting tomorrow.
And these are things that I can incorporate like in the meal plan. So when people sign up with Insight, they get a free meal plan at the very beginning. And, you know, there's all kinds, and we ask them, you know, do you want plant-based or not plant-based? And a lot of people aren't ready for this change yet. They just need to clean things up first, and then, you know, we can take them to the next level. But this is where Insight is going. This is how far we are in advance because of the trench work that a lot of us have done. You know, Ben and Joel, myself, and Greg's been on the other side of it. He's been the recipient of information from people like us, whereas we've been giving information, and it's been leading us down this road. And I really find that I'm at a place where it's starting to make sense now. Like, I'm very dangerous because I'm aware of what I don't know now. And I'm seeing things in a totally different perspective, from a totally different angle. And, you know, for years I've been like so many other people, and I've been isolating nutrients and weighing and measuring and putting it together and, you know, getting my meat, you know, I've done it all, guys. And this is the first time that it's ever really made sense to me. And it's one of the only things that I've ever, ever successfully been able to sustain.
Yeah.
Yes, that's going to be the next big Netflix show.
Yeah.
Neil's reward meal. Oh my.
Hard pass.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sticking until we find something better. Huh?
Yeah. All right, we better find something better tonight.
Oh, that is where we're going to leave it tonight. Yeah.
All right.
So man, this might be my favorite podcast. Like, I'm 100% incorporating this my diet. It's starting tomorrow. Interesting.
Look at it. Like, do some research, and you'll see now that you're thinking like this, it's like, you know, buying a red car. You'll be able to see other red cars because you got the red car. You'll start to see the connections, and it's pretty cool. And, you know, Ben, when you go to work for Simple for Life, and when you're in there and you're counseling people, you'll start to see what I'm talking about. And it's pretty cool. Like, if that works, then it works the other way around. Like, if cutting people's carbs at night and it takes them that far, I believe this can take them even further, and it will stop the that insulin spike during the day. And it really makes it much easier to manage your appetite when the protein isn't there in such a proportion that it's causing huge insulin spikes. And then, because what goes up must come down. And that's, I feel, where people get hungry in the evening, is their insulin after having a carbohydrate protein rich lunch is plummeting in the evening. Whereas if you remove that carbohydrate or that protein, that animal based protein at lunchtime, you'll see that it's more of a regulated process. And just the last second here, I took a guy to lunch. He was really bucking me on this, business guy. He brought me in to work with a group of his, he had 20 some employees, and I was working with him, and he thought I was full of smoke. So I took him out to dinner, lunch, invited him to lunch, wanted to talk about it. Okay. You know, so, I pre-ordered his lunch. So he got there, and I had the vegetarian flatbread pizza, and he had spaghetti with meatball. Right. So we ate it. It was there, it was ready for him. As soon as he sat down, we ate it. So the lunch was approximately an hour, ran a little bit over, but I just wanted to bring the point up. And as the lunch progressed, as we talked, he started to get tired. right? He started to, I could notice he was just getting a little bit tired and started yawn a little bit. You know, I can be pretty friggin' boring, but we were outside, we were on a patio. There was lots to look at. I made sure there was a lot of stimuli around, and he was getting tired and starting to sink in his seat. So I explained, okay, so this is where I use that. And anyway, so I said, you know what, tomorrow I want you to come here, have what I ate, and we'll sit and we'll talk again. And anyway, so we did met a second time. It wasn't the next day, but it was a couple of days after when he could accommodate it. And he came back and he said, yeah, like after the lunch was over, he could feel, he had that qualitative measurement now. Hmm. He's like, yeah, honestly, like I'm ready to go back to work. I feel like I'm invigorated. Now, you know, again, it's a rough study. It's a rough case because he could have got a better night's sleep the night before. But yeah, again, it was enough.
I feel that there's something to it though, man, though. Yeah. Like after a heavy carb with, like I said, spaghetti meatballs, I'm done after two, like totally.
Yeah.
But even mine, even like broccoli and eggs, I feel like I felt better off it, but it wasn't so heavy. But now I'm going to incorporate just the just the plant-based and see the difference. I'll be able to tell the difference, right? So it's
exactly, I'm yeah, like for it. If you ate the meatballs, you'd be good. If you ate the spaghetti, you'd be good. And right, then just putting them together, and that's, you know, again, that's the rice and the pork and the rice and the chicken and the rice and the beef. They're right, just, it's causing, it's like mixing household cleaners. One alone is great, but you put them together and there's a synergistic effect.
Sometimes you make sense, man.
Sometimes
that brain of yours works really well.
As long as it's not around a computer. That's my kryptonite.
Everyone's got it, man, right?
Everybody's got it. That's my kryptonite. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Insight Nature versus Nurture podcast for this week. I hope we gave you lots to think about, lots to expand your perspective and start looking at your day a little differently. Because again, when you think differently, different things happen. And it's not about changing the world. It's about changing you in it, and your world changes. So thanks for being a part of this.
You too can be an Insight member. For less than $40 a month, you can have a personalized meal plan, access to our app and our private Facebook group, as well as other perks and prizes. For more information, go to insighthf.com.